Good morning. Welcome. Welcome back. If you were with us for the first hour of the program, it's Ask the Pastor on Worldwide KFUO Radio. Worldwide KFUO Radio is the messenger of good news and a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thank you. It's Friday. Hope you're enjoying your day. A few clouds out there. It's going to be nice on Saturday here in the St. Louis metro area. Hopefully it will be equally as clement where you are. Well, boy, oh boy, oh boy, look at this. We are presented with such a stack of stuff today. And, you know, on Friday, we always like to have a little bit of fun as well as take a look at the serious side of things that are in the news or going on in the church or whatever the case may be. And look at this. This is what we are presented with today. Lab tech parties with escaped monkeys. Can you believe this? The story is about a university employee who was found, well, in a sort of a condition of undress with certain research monkeys roaming free and intoxicated out of his mind. Which made me wonder, Pastor Noland, is that evolution, the monkeys trying to be like us, or de-evolution, this guy trying to be more like the monkeys?
It sounds like quite a party to me in any event.
Oh, gracious. You know, the trouble we can get into without even trying. Can you imagine?
I think so. That just sounds like lots of fun. They say yeah. A barrel of monkeys, but anyway. Oh, what is a research monkey anyway?
I don't know. Apparently, they're smarter than we are.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, well, so, if they're the ones doing the research, I would assume so.
Are they the ones that, like, they do biological experiments on? I thought a lot of that was outlawed, I think, for whatever reason.
You know, this story here from, it's from, it says Georgia Health Sciences University. Is where this took place. This might very well be some kind of, maybe, I don't know, psychological research or maybe immunological research.
Yeah, that could be.
You know, it could be alcohol tolerance, too. and the monkeys won.
The monkeys won, yeah. So what is like the college, those college parties where the guys sit across the table and see who can drink more and the monkeys won.
Well, you know, the frat boys have the grooming habits that would make a monkey blush, so I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
You're making the case for de-evolution here, I think.
Well, the frat boys can make that part of that case pretty well.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. If you'd like to get into the conversation, question, comment, anywhere you'd like to go, that's the joy of Friday. It's kind of like Outback Steakhouse around here. No rules, just right. Now, you know, Pastor Noland, today, just on a quick, serious note, this is the day that the church does commemorate another one of the great saints that I must confess that I know just a little bit about, but perhaps a little bit more enlightenment would be good, and that would be St. Bartholomew, Apostle. Who is St. Bartholomew, and he doesn't seem to have just one name.
Yeah, he's one of the 12 first, one of the 12 apostles for people that aren't really have all those names up in their head, and he's mentioned only in the synoptics, I believe, not in John, and also in Acts. Bart, or be it Bar, means son of, so I guess it's son of Ptolemy, or Ptolemy, I guess. I think he's sometimes identified with Nathaniel. So whether or not that's the case, I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on the New Testament or on these type of details. So that's what we know about him from the New Testament. And then what we know from church history, Eusebius, who is the major church historian of about the time of St. Augustine and Constantine, Eusebius says that he visited India. Evidently he visited India, and then years later they found the Gospel according to Matthew, that was left behind, supposedly, by Bartholomew. Now, whether that is the Bartholomew that is the saint that we're celebrating and the same apostle, or was another guy named Bartholomew, that's where I think there may be some discrepancy, or you just don't know for sure. There's a lot of questions in history that we don't have answers to. But that is what they believe based on what Eusebius said, so I think that's a pretty reliable source. So supposedly Bartholomew made it all the way to India, as also did the Apostle Thomas. And there's a lot more evidence, certainly, that Thomas made it there. And then the last thing we know about Bartholomew is that he was flayed alive in Armenia. You know, flaying means they they basically scalp you over your whole body, which is, I guess, according to the records of the saints, that all the apostles were killed in a different manner except for St. John, who died of old age. And his feast day is today. Or, wait, that's August 24th. Is that today? Yeah, I guess
it is.
So that's how it's celebrated in the Catholic and the Western churches. And that's pretty much all we know about Bart. Oh, and one other thing. Anybody that lives in New York City knows St. Bart's is on Park Avenue, north of Grand Central Station. It's a big, huge, I believe, Episcopalian church, and it's in the Byzantine style. It's a beautiful church. If you're in New York around Grand Central, it's worth walking north on Park Avenue. It's on the right-hand side, and checking out St. Bart's. Everybody in New York City knows about St. Bart's.
To that sort of obscurity of St. Bartholomew, why are some apostles more important than others, or at least seemingly so by what we know of their accomplishments?
Well, we know that Jesus had an inner circle. That's clear that Peter, James, and John were, you know, they got to have special experiences with Jesus. For example, the Transfiguration was only Peter, James, and John. And then when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, he was talking with the apostles, and they took Peter, James, and John a farther distance. So that's kind of his inner circle. We don't know all the reasons for that. And then, of course, Matthew gets a lot of press because, well, he wrote a book. He wrote the Gospel according to Matthew. And some of the others, we have a few more stories. I'm not sure all that, other than Jesus probably didn't want the matter of leadership to be up in the air after his ascension. And so that it's clear, and according to the book of Acts, that Peter held the leadership position. James did too, and that's why James was singled out along with Peter for arrest, and James was executed by King Herod. So apart from that, I think most of the stories in the Gospels and Acts pretty much lay out the equality of the apostles. But that's about the best I know. Beyond that, you'd have to talk to an expert in the Synoptic Gospels.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You ready for some calls, Pastor?
Anytime.
All right, let's start out with Bill. Bill, good morning. Comment about a preacher who turned into an atheist. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was listening to WGBH Boston Public Radio on the Internet this morning, and they had as a guest a preacher from Louisiana who had been in the ministry for 25 years as a Pentecostal preacher. And he said he evolved out of Christianity, and, you know, that's always disturbing to hear, especially when it's broadcast over the media. And the two hosts on the show were, you know, they seemed pleased that he was telling his story. But he said something which to me was key as to why this happened with him. He said that one of his good friends had a motorcycle accident, and he could not pray for him. Well, after saying that, he said, you know, I would preach to my congregation, and I would preach hell and damnation, and I love these people, and I didn't know how to preach hell and damnation, telling them, and this is underlined, that if you did this or this, God would send you to hell. And I realized at that point that this man does not understand law and gospel. That was the crux right there. He did not understand law and gospel. So he went on. So I called the radio station, and the fellow who answered was very kind in listening to me, and thanks to KFUO and people like Don Matzett and Wilkin and others, I was able to talk to him about Dr. Luther and the forensic righteousness, and it's not about us, it's about Jesus. And, well, maybe somebody in Boston heard the gospel.
Marty?
Great. Good for you. I'm glad you responded that way, and it shows you things that we can do, and that media is not just a one-way street, although obviously editors and the people at the top, they do have some control. But, you know, calling in for a program like that and giving a winsome witness is something that anybody can do. You know, you got to pay attention to the whole program. You don't want to just jump in the middle and miss maybe what people said before. But what you did was a very good thing. And also, people can respond in the op-ed, opinion editorial pages of newspapers to things that are said. Again, you don't want to be bashing people or name calling or anything like that, but presenting a winsome Christian witness. And because these media outlets, they're required to make available the other side. There are laws about that, and you can take advantage of that. And they won't give you a lot of time, but you can do that. And that's a good example of that. I would also commend you for your observance of the problem that he had, and that is that he really didn't understand the gospel. He was a Christian preacher, you could think in the wider sense of what, you know, the people that are classified as Christians. But he didn't really understand what Christianity is all about in its essence. And you pointed that out very well. And that's one thing that, for me, that's why I'm a Lutheran, is that it is very clear. It should be clear in our preaching, but it's very clear, certainly, in our traditions, in our confessions, and the training of our pastors and teachers, that the gospel is the main thing. The forgiveness of sins should be front and center all the time. And, that's unfortunately, that's not always the case in other Christian churches.
And also, to Bill's point, and I agree with you completely, Pastor Nolan, that the preaching exposits everything you said beautifully in the Lutheran context, but only the people in the congregation get to hear that, and that's why I was so gratified to hear that he said that it was the programming at KFUO that helped inform him to a point where he was able to go on that program in Boston and,
right.
and talk about Dr. Luther and Lutheran theology, and it just... It's a remarkable gift that this Lutheran radio station has for, what, almost 88 years now.
Right.
In teaching our people.
Right. And so refer people you know to KFUO so they can listen
right.
to things like this and get the truth, especially if they're not going to church on a regular basis.
Well, especially because if they can't hear you preach on a Sunday morning, you can come on a program like this and we can look at the world today and we can give some good, solid scriptural application, also doctrinal application. And maybe some folks that otherwise wouldn't be exposed to it are going to get to hear it. Who knows where that'll go?
Exactly.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I got a bunch of Mormon stuff here today, but we've got lots of callers looking forward to talking with you. Pastor Nolan Herman, good morning. You're up next.
Yes, I recognize Dr. Nolan's voice on the radio there, and thought I'd call in. This coming Sunday, the epistle is out of Chapter 5 of Ephesians on the submission of Christ for our redemption, and the under that the structural relationship and model of the headship and submission of wives and husbands, but also the whole Christian church is essentially in submission to Christ. Even the man who is a pastor is a submission into Christ and his doctrine and faith. And Dr. Nolan, when you went to Union Theological Seminary, I remember you commenting out there in New York City that the incoming women students were in more or less to submit to the lesbian radical feminist faculty kind of cabal and become a makeover of them, and these people in their ideology sort of see it as more or less ideologically unacceptable for women to submit to anyone outside of themselves, yet they expected these incoming women to submit to their ideology. Do you see the incongruity there?
Yeah,
there's incongruity there, and that's one of the reasons I brought it out. I would say, to be fair to all the students there, there's certainly some students there that come from more traditional backgrounds, and there were some students that I knew that have very happy marriages. Some were more egalitarian than others. So you can't say, all the students that come out of one school are going to be like that. But overall, the general message from most of the faculty and most of the students was that this biblical passage, Ephesians 5, is wrong, and it's a stumbling block, and we need to teach against it. And that's generally what they did. So, Herman, that's... that will be a passage that you might hear in the pulpit, but not because they're in favor of it this week.
Yes, it would strike me that Jesus Christ had the most perfect submission, obedience to the cross for our salvation. No one can outdo the perfection of his submission or the perfection of his reign of grace over us. And so consequently, that text really comes from him and what Christ has done and extended to us.
Yeah, very good.
Well, thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Herman.
Thank you, Herman. Have a great weekend. Appreciate the phone call. You can join us if you like, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Marty, when I got you on the phone, I mentioned to you that ABC News a couple of nights ago had run a couple of segments on Mormonism, and this is, I think, going to start popping up more and more now that the Republican Convention is here, and probably the best known, I don't want to necessarily say foremost, but probably the best known Mormon right now is Mitt Romney. And what I thought I'd do is I'd take some of the audio and play it for you, because it's interesting how ABC presents the story. And I thought we'd go through a couple of these clips and sort of see where the conversation takes us. You game for that?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, here comes the first one. This is the introduction to the piece. Hang on for 1 second here. There we go. 1, 2, 3. Now it should work.
It's a time of change in America. In the last 12 years alone, we have seen the election of the first black president, the first Jewish candidate on a major ticket, Senator Joe Lieberman, and next week, another breakthrough. The first Mormon nominee for president, a profound and historic moment for the Mormon faith, which is still a mystery to a lot of people. So tonight, Dan Harris begins a two-part series answering questions about this uniquely American religion.
What's interesting about that first clip is that it's a profound, a momentous time for Mormons, but she doesn't really say why or to what end.
Well, that perhaps is maybe she took for granted that everybody understands. Mormonism was traditionally understood by, at least by the Protestant mainline, by all Protestants and Catholics, anybody that would be traditional Christianity of any sort, and including the liberal Protestant branch, considered Mormons to be a cult, because it got its start a kind of a cult type of situation. And if you remember the David Koresh thing down in Waco, Texas, Jim Jones back in San Francisco and then Guyana, that was the type of social network that was going around Joseph Smith in his lifetime. And one of the most objectionable things, besides the fact that he was kind of a cult leader, was the practice not only for him, but I believe for him, but also most of his followers, that polygamy was accepted. In other words, polygamy is one husband with several wives. And wherever the Mormons were, they started out in Palmyra, New York, and quickly their neighbors asked them to leave and kind of forced them out. Then I believe the next spot, I think there's someplace in Ohio, and then they settled for a while in Nauvoo, Illinois. Maybe before that they were in Independence, Missouri. But finally, after Joseph Smith was assassinated by people that opposed him, the Mormons felt that they could not practice their religion among Americans. And so they went into exile, as it were, to the state of Utah. And if you've ever been to Utah, you'd say, yeah, this is a state of exile. And so for many years, for almost a century, the Mormons were considered outside of the mainstream of American life, certainly outside of religion. And that has only changed, I would say, in the earlier or the mid portion of the 20th century, where Mormonism itself changed. It discouraged, in fact, the largest group that's based in Salt Lake City does not accept polygamy anymore. There are smaller groups, branch groups, that don't associate with them, that now that still accept polygamy, but the big group does not, and they become much more American in many different ways. For example, like many other religions, for example, the Southern Baptists after the Civil War were segregationists. They did not accept blacks into their churches. That only really changed in the 1960s. The Mormons were very similar to that, but the Mormons also accepted the civil rights movement, and now people of all races and colors are accepted in their churches. So, but the big point is that for the first part of their history, as we look at it, the first 200 years or so, they first 150 years, they were outside the mainstream, and they were considered outsiders and something wrong with them. So for them to have now a candidate that is supported by the by one of the major political parties, that is a very big deal. Just as big deal, as they said, for Joseph Lieberman to be at the last election, to have a Jew up at that point. Was that for vice president, I believe?
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, to have that, that's a major accomplishment, and just as significant as when the Roman Catholics were able to elect John F. Kennedy, because before that, there was very strong anti-papal sentiment in the United States among the mainline denominations.
You know, Lutherans aren't mysterious. Some people might call us odd, but we're not mysterious people, and Buddhists aren't necessarily mysterious, or some of the other, you know, other religions that are in the United States.
Right.
But in this story, they specifically start out by saying that Mormons are a mysterious group of people, and that's in spite of, you know, in recent years, several multi-million dollar ad campaigns. So I'm just kind of curious, why do you think they're still a mystery?
Well, I think the biggest difficulty is you have Mormonism that's known in the history books, that is Joseph Smith and the Mormon Trail. By the way, the National Park Service has what I believe it's called the Mormon Pioneer Trail, which traces their path from Nauvoo, Illinois, all the way to Utah. And so even kids in elementary school learn a little bit about the Mormons, but what they don't learn about is the modern-day Mormon. What they learn about is the historical Mormon and how they were persecuted and how they had polygamy and they all settled in Salt Lake City. You know, they don't really get the up-to-date. So it's a mystery because, well, how did they get from there to here? Well, you could do the same thing with the Missouri Synod, which started as a bunch of German immigrants,
yeah,
which did not speak English, and they refused to speak English until the 1920s. That's our historical background. What I think is the most difficult for people to understand, though, is that Mormons have a religious book, which is authoritative to them, and that is used to read, and they read the Bible through the Book of Mormon, and most people have never read the Book of Mormon, so they have no idea what's in there. And then when you start reading it or hearing about it, you hear all these names that sound like fantasy fiction, you know, like Nephi. I thought that was a grape drink or something. and you go to the state of Utah. Yeah. I've driven through there several times, and you pass these towns, and I say, I don't think I've ever heard this name before, and I think it comes from the Book of Mormon. So I think it's the unfamiliarity of our people in the United States with the Book of Mormon that accounts for most of confusion and mystery and what did they really believe.
About a half a minute from now we'll be going to the break, so I don't want to be unfair and play another clip for you very quickly, but you've seen these commercials they've been running where people are doing really cool stuff and they're surfing or they're riding motorcycles or they're people of different ethnic backgrounds and they're doing things that maybe you or I would want to do, and the tagline is, "And I'm a Mormon." And when we get back from the break, if you've seen those, I'm curious as to what your opinion is as to why you think they're running them. And the whole idea of, are they saying we're Christians just like you? And if they are, why does their theology hold that we're not Christians, we're Gentiles? We'll talk about that when we get back from the break with the Reverend Dr. Martin Nolan, who serves as pastor at Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana. It's Ask the Pastor. Join us. The break is a great time to call in. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
Is Christianity just a blind leap of faith into the darkness? Or is it a sure conviction from God founded on historical evidence of His love and forgiveness in Christ? our interview with the clear-thinking Christian apologist, Greg Kokel, on the next Book Talk.
Weekday afternoons at 2:30 on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Live Friday on Issues Etc., we'll talk to Bobby Ross Jr. about media coverage of a Sunday worship service attended by Mitt Romney. We'll also discuss Bartholomew the Apostle with Pastor Burnell Eckert, and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
Issues Etc. live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO Radio.
The messenger of good news.
Next time on Adventures in Odyssey, everyone celebrates their victory over the Green Ring Conspiracy.
All hail the conquering hero.
But every great adventure has consequences.
Miss Wise, you have to come with me.
You're arresting me?
Sometimes in unexpected ways.
Penny isn't answering her phone. I hope she's all right.
Oh, she had to move out.
Move out? Don't miss Penny's next Adventure in Odyssey.
Saturday mornings at 8:30 on KFUO.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, host of Moments of Assurance and Jubilation, inviting you to have a KFUO Sunday at your church. I'd be happy to preach the message for the day and share all about our KFUO ministry during the Bible class hour. You'll hear excerpts of all our programs, and also you'll have an opportunity to ask any questions you might have. So why not schedule a KFUO Sunday today? Just call Joni at 800-844-0524. Get yours on the schedule today.
Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney says he and his wife share a strong faith.
And is also a religious person with a great deal of faith and confidence in the future and confidence that that things will work to our eternal benefit if we abide by the covenants we have with God, with each other, if we do our best to live a good life.
Romney talked about his Mormon faith on the EWTN Catholic Network.
I believe that Providence has helped guide me in decisions I made throughout my life. I pray every day, typically more than once. When I pray, I pray for guidance.
And sometimes for forgiveness.
Heaven knows I've made mistakes, things I've confessed before God and repented of.
Does he believe God wants him to be president?
You know, I don't believe that God gets heavily involved in politics.
I'm Steve Coleman.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Recently, the Red Cross of Columbus, Ohio, set up a blood drive inside an abortion mill. So I called the Red Cross to find out why. Their spokesperson, Rodney Wilson, told me they didn't know at the time it was an abortion mill. Then he added a really shocking statement. We would see that as irrelevant, he said. He also said they don't take a stand on abortion. But a report from the International Federation of the Red Cross, which Rodney acknowledges is one with the American Red Cross, strongly advocates for accessible abortions around the world. The Red Cross website reads, "Its purpose is to protect life, and they may not take sides in controversies of a political, religious, or ideological nature." Looks like the Red Cross is selectively enforcing its own principles.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Good morning and welcome back to Ask the Pastor on Worldwide KFUO, Messenger of Good News. Our guest this morning is the Reverend Dr. Martin Noland from Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, known as, in very familiar circles here at KFUO, as the resident historian of Studio A, the program I do on the weekends. Did you happen to hear the AP Religion News Roundup during the break?
No, I didn't.
Okay. It was talking about Mitt Romney giving an interview to EWTN. And a couple of, and the reason I was doing this today is because, as I said, this is going to be coming up more and more
right.
in the news. And you have to, this is where I think Lutheran theologians and Lutheran pastors are remarkably adept at parsing and discerning exactly what's being said, because we take for granted that words don't mean the same thing to the same people.
Right.
You know, there's a variety there. So in this report, he was talking about, you know, honoring the covenants we have with God. Now, is a covenant with God in the Mormon context the same kind of a covenant made with the God of the Bible?
Yeah. Well, that's a very good question, and certainly they would understand covenants and ordinances and laws in a different way than we do. So, you have to understand that politicians seek a language that is as religious neutral as possible. I think I did catch part of that. He said something at the end about how God has not involved himself in politics.
I think Luther had something to say about that also.
Yeah, so the separation of religion and politics is, I think, generally a good thing. I mean, because politics deals with this things here on earth and religion with things in heaven. I mean, that's the simplest way to explain it. You're not going to get to heaven by joining a political party. I think generally what he said there is true, but this is something that all politicians do, and rightly so. If they're going to serve the people of the United States, we are a religiously diverse country, and they should try to avoid offending anybody if they can. If they can't avoid that on a religious basis. Any politician has to take a certain number of stands or platforms, and that's going to offend some people. And the more stands he takes, the more people he offends. So, you know, if he can come across as somewhat as religious, but otherwise, you say, neutral, pious, believes in God, but not out to bash people's heads in, rhetorically or otherwise, that's the safest place for a politician to be in the United States. So he's not doing anything different than most other politicians do in the United States, and that is what some sociologists or historians call civil religion. It's a religion that is, it isn't really the true religion. It's a religion, a way of talking about religion that is acceptable and it causes the least amount of offense.
Well, I think his comments just in that very short piece are revealing about what kind of a religion Mormonism is. He talks about we have to keep our covenants with God, live a good life, and everything will work out for the best if we do.
Well, you know, actually probably 95% of the United States people that are religious believe that.
Yeah.
So it's only us weird Lutherans, and I don't think we even make 5% of the population.
No.
You know, we're the ones who think, oh, well, you can't be saved by works, it's only by faith, which actually is a command of God. You know, Jesus does command us to believe him, believe his words. So you'd really, if you really want to argue the point, you could say that's a type of work, but we don't argue it that way. We say this is what Jesus expects of us. It is the minimal, it is what is required, because if you don't believe in Jesus, well, you're not going to be saved. John 3:16-18 makes that very clear. So I don't think he's really saying anything out of the mainstream when he says that God expects us to do good works. It's not something that Lutherans would agree with, of course. Yeah. And you notice, by the way, we've never had a Lutheran vice president or a Lutheran president, and it's probably just because of that.
Well, we did have William Rehnquist. He was the Chief Justice of the Supreme
That's
Court.
That's true, yeah. We've had congressmen and senators and Supreme Court, and certainly a lot of Lutherans have served in lower branches of government at the state level as mayors and things like that. Nothing against Lutherans here at all.
Yeah, well, you know, Congressman John Shimkus is serving in that buffer state between Missouri and Indiana, Illinois.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, has been on the program and is a good friend and supporter of KFUO Radio.
Yeah.
Let me play another little snippet of this ABC News report, because this gets more fascinating as it goes along.
With their imposing temples where secret rituals are performed, rituals so sacred that non-Mormons cannot enter, and with their all-male leadership believed to have a direct line to God, members of the Mormon faith are keenly aware that they are sometimes seen as a source of mystery and suspicion.
Well, do we bar people from our rituals, Pastor Nolan?
Yes, we do. We do not accept, at least in Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, our official policy is that people that are not of our faith are not welcome to take the Lord's Supper with us.
But you wouldn't bar them from the church.
Right. They can participate by joining, walking in the door and sitting in the pew and listening to everything that's involved. But we do have that one limitation, that you cannot receive the Lord's Supper and unless you have gone through proper training and that you confess the same faith that we confess. So, you know, and for some people in America, that is a big thing. They think, oh, we're really exclusivistic because we have that. But that's the one thing that we have that's a bar. But it isn't like a mystery. And that is one thing that is, I think, that clip is good to point out. You can't, unless you're a Mormon, you can't go into the temple. I don't even know if you can go into the tabernacles. I don't know all the rules. I grew up in the West, and I had some good friends in high school that were Mormon, but they generally didn't talk about their religion. My dad had a very good friend that I used to go backpacking with, my dad and him, and he was a Mormon. And actually, I learned more about Mormonism from Mr. Woods than from any of my friends, because he was willing to talk about it, and I think he was an elder. But my main impression of Mormons is that, they're pious people. They are religious people. They're very involved in their church community. They have a big emphasis on the family, and that's part of their heritage. But mom and dad need to spend time with their kids, not let the kids go out go crazy and whatever else. It is a big thing for them. That makes an impression on a lot of people, I think, that the fact that the Mormons, it sounds like I'm overly praising them here. I'm not trying to do that. But I do want to say that that's something that struck me about how the family is very important to them. And one of the reasons for that, and this is would be where we would disagree with them, is that they believe that the husband of the family, he has a certain a hierarchical relationship over his wife and over his children, and that hierarchical relationship will obtain in heaven. So the more kids you have, the more people you will be the king or ruler over in heaven. So there is a certain the emphasis on the family does have some vested interest, you would say, whereas the Christian faith says you go to heaven and we're all equals. That's quite a bit of a difference in the doctrine there. I may have misunderstood it, but that's what I was explained to by Mr. Woods, and I've never seen anything different on that particular doctrine.
You know, what's interesting is all the criticism. Herman brought up earlier the text from Ephesians talking about submission, and Christians are always getting bad rapped about that verse about submission. Again, ignoring the other 10 or 11 verses that follow, you know, wives submit to your
right.
husbands. But in Mormon theology, as I understand it, that priesthood holder, that father, the head of the household, who's the holder of the priesthood, his wife can only come into eternity if he calls her by her secret sacred name.
Yeah.
Now, that to me seems a lot more extreme than saying, wives, submit to your husbands.
Yeah, so your husband in Mormonism has your eternal fate in his hands. So obviously you're going to try to please him, you know?
Yes, yeah.
And this is one step beyond what the Jewish religion had in the Old Testament, where the husband could divorce his wife for any reason whatsoever. Anything that he found fault with, he could write her a bill of divorce and bang, she was out. And, you know, she had no other economic options. In Christianity, there is more of a level playing field there, because Jesus said, husbands, you cannot divorce your wives unless she commits adultery. And there's other things in there, too, but not just for any on a whim. So, yeah, there's a much greater power, you could say, that the Mormon father has over his children and over his wife.
Now, almost the tyrannical power, wouldn't you say?
Well, from our perspective... From their perspective, it would be that's the way God designed it.
Well, true,
so
true.
It's monarchy, and that's, you know, God is a king, and so therefore there should be kings on earth and in heaven. And I think that's, you just have to understand from our perspective, it is tyrannical and potentially psychologically abusive, but not necessarily.
Well, it's all about law. It's all about conform, behave, perform.
Yeah. And then you can see in that doctrine what's left of the old, the original cult social structure of Mormonism. because there definitely was that type of thing. You know, absolute strict obedience from the top down, and that was characteristic of early Mormonism.
Right.
So there's still a little vestige of that left in the structure of their family. Now, I think we should talk, though, about what we talked mentioned before, how Mormons do not consider Christians to be Christians, that we're all Gentiles. Do we have time for that?
Oh, we certainly do. As a matter of fact, if you want, let me play a couple more clips here in succession. I was going to break them into two. There'll be a little bit of a gap here, but it'll address exactly what you want to talk about.
Good.
Listen to this.
Good.
I'm a skateboarder, and I'm a Mormon.
Which, in part, is why the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints launched this public relations campaign with the message, "We're your neighbors."
I'm a Mormon.
I'm a Mormon.
I'm a Mormon.
That was one.
While Mormons, who make up just 1.7% of our population, roughly equal to Jews and double that of Muslims and Buddhists, are trying to be more open, America's best-known Mormon, who once held one of the highest positions in the church, has talked about his faith but rarely used the word Mormon.
Well, I'm not running for pastor-in-chief. I'm running for commander-in-chief.
Next question.
So, given all the mystery and misconceptions, what is it that Mormons say they believe? Here are the answers to three common questions. First, why so much secrecy? It is rooted in a painful past, according to Professor J. Spencer Fluman, a practicing Mormon and author of the upcoming book, A Peculiar People.
I don't think Mormon secrecy can be seen apart from a very bitter history of anti-Mormonism. Still, Mormons carry with them a kind of communal memory of persecution.
In the early days of the church, the Mormons were violently driven from state to state, and their founding prophet, Joseph Smith, was murdered by an angry mob. What do they believe? In the Mormon faith, the Bible is considered the Word of God, but Mormons also believe God added three more books, written by Joseph Smith, a farm boy from upstate New York. When Smith was a young man, he claimed an angel led him to a nearby hill where he dug up a pair of golden plates from which he translated the Book of Mormon. Mormons like Professor Robert Millett are well aware that adding onto the Bible in this way can be very controversial.
Latter-day Saints love and adore the Holy Bible, but we've announced it is not the end of the prophets. God still speaks.
And finally, what about Jesus? Mormons believe that when Jesus, the Son of God, returns, he will first go to Jerusalem and then to Missouri, where he will establish his kingdom on earth. For Mormons, America plays a special role. Every summer, in fact, hundreds of the faithful act out the story of the Book of Mormon, which says a tribe of ancient Israelites came to America thousands of years ago and were later visited by Jesus after the resurrection.
Mormons think they have a distinctive message. They have always thought that. But at the same time, the proximity to traditional Christianity is clear and obvious. And so it's a complicated relationship with traditional Christianity, I think, is an easy way to say it.
And that last clip there is the one that goes to your point about how they see us versus how they see themselves.
Yeah, the Mormons are what sociologists and historians of religion call restorationists. And restorationists are, and they're mostly groups that came out of the 19th century in the United States. Jehovah's Witness would be another example of that. Also, I'm thinking Church of Christ Scientist, I think also. Restorationists believe that all the existing Christians got it wrong. And in the case of the Mormons, they believe that there was a great apostasy in the Christian church after Jesus ascended into heaven, and particularly after the last apostle was dead. They say that the Christian church was corrupted with Greek philosophy and other Oriental philosophies, and that when the last apostle was martyred, that there was a loss of the apostolic priesthood. You know, the Roman Catholic Church and the Eastern Orthodox Church make a big deal about apostolic succession, that the bishop lays his hands on the new priest or the next bishop, and that passes on the authority given by Christ. Well, the Mormons claim that that particular type of priesthood authority was canceled because the apostles didn't get a chance to do it because they were their heads were chopped off. And then, so what's the answer? Well, because this early Christian, the pure Christian church was lost, God has decided, this is what they teach, to restore the early Christian church in its early purity by appointing Joseph Smith as the conduit from which the early church would be restored. And he was visited by, they say, by Peter, James, and John, and John the Baptist, and because these were the guys that were the priests of the early Christian church. And they helped Smith to recover what was lost and helped with the, I think it was the angel Moroni also was involved with that, in recording what the church needs today. And then that would make Smith and his legitimate successors modern prophets. And it means that all the other Christians that are around are really, they're in a different religious category altogether. They will not go to heaven because they haven't followed the true religion of Jesus. And that's, in a nutshell, why they're different and why they view all Christians as apart from the true faith.
Well, when they talk about, you know, we respect, we revere the scriptures, but God is still speaking, well, now they sound more like the United Church of Christ, because that's their campaign. God is still speaking.
Right. The difference is the way that they have decided to for God to speak. What the United Church of Christ means by that is that if their highest religious authority, which I believe is like a synodical convention, if the highest church body decides that, maybe a certain passage in the Bible is wrong, and we're going to teach something else, well, then that, because it's everybody involved in a democratic assembly, then God has spoken through that, and that's the way, now we know that that's the way God wants us to go. So the United Methodist, and the Methodists are generally very democratic, by the way, that's their way of seeing that it works. Well, it means that because the way democracy works, nothing happens very quickly, and it's often contradictory, so they don't have a whole lot of new revelation. But they do have adjustments once in a while. In the case of the Mormons, because they originally started out with a very strongly hierarchical, cultic type of operation, and they still, in terms of their revelation or their doctrinal norms, it's still that way. The head honchos down in Salt Lake City, they can come up with a new revelation, and everybody else has to follow it. So, and in that sense, there's some similarity with the Roman Catholic Church, which also has the doctrine of infallibility since 1870, which says if the Pope writes a letter that's officially from his throne and in his office, he can establish a new doctrine even if there's nothing about it at all in the scriptures or totally contradicts the scriptures. So in that sense, there's a whole lot of similarity between the Roman Catholic Church and the Mormon Church, just they have two different heads. One's in Salt Lake City, the other one is in Vatican City in Rome.
All right, we have two things pending here. I've got an email from Eric. I'm going to go to that first because it's been sitting here for a little bit. And then Jan's on the line. We'll go to Jan immediately after this. Very quickly from Eric, he writes in and says, I'm wondering if Dr. Nolan could explain justification specifically. Is it a one-time event, and does it encompass all salvation, including baptism and sanctification?
Now, that's a good question, Eric. Justification is a one-time event in the sense of Christ died on the cross. 3 hours of agony and pain, and the payment for hell and damnation was all done at one time. That's what Lutherans talk about as objective justification. That was done one time. It was done for the whole world and accomplished the salvation of all mankind from Adam till the very last person that will be born or conceived. So that's a one-time event. The justification of an individual, you or me, is an ongoing thing, and it's a status into which we're placed. So a person is justified and reconciled to God and considered innocent and without sin when they're baptized. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. And that's because they've been in God's court. They've been considered they're considered justified and innocent. That's an ongoing status. So you can't really think of it as a one-time event. And the other reason is that if you cease to believe in it, if you cease to believe in Jesus and his word and the promises he gives, well, then it's no longer valid. So if you said it was a one-time event and that's your guaranteed ticket to heaven, that would contradict the doctrine of the possibility of falling away.
Right, that would be once saved, always saved.
Right, exact, which we reject.
Can we jump over to the phones very quickly?
Go ahead.
All right, Jan, we've got about 3 minutes here. Go ahead.
Hi, Roland. Hi, Pastor. Thanks for taking the call. I'd like your insights on two verses, Jude chapter 1, the third verse, and Revelation 22, verses 18 and 19. And the reason I'm looking at those is, what does Jude mean, once for all? And in the Revelation 22 passage, is this warning for just the book of Revelation or the entirety of the Holy Bible? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Jane. Oh. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead, Dr. Nolan.
Okay, I will. Revelation 22 is that has been understood since the Holy Spirit is the author of the entire Bible, both through prophets and apostles. It has been understood by the church as a warning for the entire Scriptures. You might say, well, then there's two meanings, because it really looks like John is saying it's the end of this book. Namely, the book of Revelation. But the truth is that there are a number of passages in Scripture where you can say there are two different fulfillments of them. A prophecy can have two fulfillments. You can't say it's just one. And so I think traditionally the church has said that this does apply to the entire Scriptures, although John originally intended it for Revelation. And then Jude 1, verse 3, it says, I felt I had to write and urge you to contend for the faith that was once for all entrusted to the saints. I'm not sure that it's really talking about the fact that is the salvation once for all, as in the previous caller, or the previous, Eric was talking about justification once for all.
Right.
I believe that this is talking about the fact that that the faith that was taught by Jesus and taught to the apostles was delivered to the Christian church in the lifetime of the apostles, and that that there is to be expected no other revelation from God until Jesus returns. That is how I understand that passage. I'm not sure how other Lutherans have interpreted that, but that's what I understood it to be.
The Reverend Dr. Martin Nolan has been our guest this morning on Ask the Pastor. He serves at Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana. Always delightful to have you on the program. We went everywhere today, from research monkeys partying to justification. We covered
all. I like the research
monkeys. Yes.
Thanks for having me, Roland.
Thank you, my friend. God bless. All right, guys, that's it. I want you to have a tremendous weekend. Please go out there and enjoy it. Be safe. We want you back here Monday for more Bible study and more Ask the Pastor. And hey, here's a great idea. Go to church. See you Monday. Bye-bye.
Listen to the Bible study Monday through Friday at this same time. The Bible study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download archives at kfuo.org. The Bible study is heard weekdays on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
On the next broadcast of Open Mic Friday, we will begin with responding to one of our callers during the week who quoted the Bible to the effect that Eve was deceived into sinning, but Adam was not. What precisely does that mean? And if you want to ask a question, email me at lawgospel@lawgospel.com.
Weekdays at 2 p.m. on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
The Apostle Paul has written, "Now may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, that you may abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit." Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson. If you get all caught up in the so-called hope you get from this world, you're going to be sadly disappointed. But God's hope in His Word fills your heart with a hope that abounds. It just keeps on coming. You will not be disappointed. Join me for that non-disappointing hope and Moments of Assurance Sunday at 9:15 a.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
The messenger of good news, KFUO Clayton, St. Louis, KFUO HD, worldwide at KFUO.org.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Two dead, nine wounded in a morning shootout near the Empire State Building.
It took about 15 seconds. A lot of pop, 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 like one shot after the other.
Mark Engel was on a bus traveling through Manhattan when he heard the shooting, which began when an armed and angry laid-off employee returned to his former workplace. He shot a former co-worker in the head, then took off. Our John Belmont picks up the story from here.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg says the dead include the shooter, who was an ex-worker in the area.
He killed one person, and at least nine other people were shot, and some may have been shot accidentally by police officers.
He says those are not life-threatening injuries. Police Commissioner Ray Kelly says a construction worker followed the shooter and pointed him out to two police officers posted at the building.
He pulled his .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol from his bag and fired on the officers, who returned fire, killing him.
The commissioner says the shooter was a 53-year-old designer of women's accessories who was laid off about a year ago. I'm John Belmont.
The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency has stripped Lance Armstrong 7 Tour de France titles, deciding he had used performance-enhancing drugs to do it. Armstrong is also banned from cycling for life. Our Jack Briggs on what it all means.
An athlete who became a hero to thousands for overcoming cancer and for his foundation's fight against the disease is now officially a drug cheat in the eyes of his nation's doping agency.
Armstrong denied the doping but decided to stop fighting the charges against him. The military chief of special ops is warning his troops not to expose sensitive information about what they do, or the government will take legal action against them. A retired Navy SEAL has just revealed that he has written a book about the mission that killed Osama bin Laden. The book will come out on September 11th. It's already a bestseller on Amazon.com. This is AP Radio.